When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100 megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome sales event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome sales event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Football fans, do you want to hear the whole unadulterated truth about where your team stands?
It's the most embarrassing film I have ever watched in my entire life.
Former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth gives his perspective on the top storylines and games on a weekly basis on the Stinkin' Truth Podcast.
You may get out of here with two sacks and a tackle for loss, but you're getting out with a bloody nose.
New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday.
It's going to be a street fight.
Make sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Baseball, the Blue October. Postseason baseball coming to Kansas City for the first time in 9 years. But that's three games away. Game three, Wednesday, Kauffman Stadium. Man, we have so much time to look forward to that. Less than 48 hours away from game one of the ALDS in New York City, the Royals, the heaviest of the underdogs in the division series. Royals, according to the wise guys, only have a 35% chance of winning this best of five game series. 1-2 in New York, 3-4 at Kauffman Stadium. Game five, if necessary, back in the Bronx. Listen, I understand the Pinstripers and Derek Jeter for some of you. Reggie Jackson, Billy Martin for some others. Maybe we got a few Mickey Mantles, Roger Maris's out there listening, but I understand the Yankees for most of us have been, throughout our lives, detestable. But they've also been the biggest brand in the sport, so I understand why people outside of Kansas City might find themselves betting on the New York Yankees. But I don't see one good reason why the Detroit Tigers, the San Diego Padres, why these other teams aren't as sizable of underdogs, or why the Royals' odds aren't just a little bit better. Because, ladies and gentlemen, if this Royals bullpen is now a strength, then you can play with anyone. Well, you've already been able to play with anyone because of your rotation, defense, team speed, and the best damn player on the planet. But if the bullpen is now a strength, I mean, you can go toe-to-toe with anyone if you are one of, if not the most well-rounded team remaining in Major League Baseball, because where's the weak link? You know, that's my question for you. Now, you can respond. We'll take your thoughts on the text line throughout tonight's program. Text line is always there for you, 913-586-7965. That's 913-586-7965. I'm already seeing it here, the offense. We're worried about the offense. The offense is the weak link. Well, the offense got the job done in Baltimore, now didn't they? Three runs, I understand, but three runs was just enough. Now, they executed. They allowed the scoreboard to dictate their approach, the exact same recipe followed by the boys a decade ago. Vinny's back in this lineup. He's back in this lineup doing Vinny Pasquantino things. Driving in runs, which, don't get it twisted, RBI, being able to come through with that big clutch knock. That is indeed a skill, and Vinny Pasquantino has as much of that skill as almost anybody else in Major League Baseball. So what I wanted to see from this offense, that, let's not get it twisted, this offense has never been at the forefront of the team. Now, Bobby or Salvi or Vinny, they may have on an individual basis, but as a unit, no, this team has never been led by its offense. It's been the rotation, the defense, the team speed of late, the bullpen, right? That's the offense. This is the offense of late, these two games against the Baltimore Orioles. This is the offense that you and I watched for the first 5 months of the season prior to Vinny's injury. An offense that, again, is not leading this team, but is not hindering this team. It's an offense that remains middle of the road, right? That was the word I used throughout April and May and June. It's an offense that's middle of the road, 13th, 15th best in Major League Baseball. And now maybe that left something to be desired over the course of 162, but come the postseason, man, I don't care where you rank. What I need you to do for these nine innings, for this 2.5 hour, 3 hour stretch, I need you to execute. I'm not trying to see the Royals get into a slugfest. Are you? That's not this team. If they find themselves in a slugfest, that means Seth Lugo or Cole Reagans or Michael Wacha was not the strength that they've been all season. You know, if they find themselves in a slugfest, that means this bullpen, which was not the strength early on in the season, but it has been down the stretch. If they find themselves in a slugfest, that's not who the 2024 Kansas City Royals have ever done. You know, this bullpen takes them from being a good team to a very good team. Now, I don't believe there are great teams right now in Major League Baseball, only very good teams. And it certainly appears, with what we've seen over the past 48 hours, what we've seen really over the past 4 weeks, from Lucas Erceg and Chris Bubich and Daniel Lynch and John Schreiber and the rest, it certainly appears as if those Royals are one of those very good teams. A team that left for Washington, D.C. 10 days ago, played 3 in the nation's capital, flew into Atlanta last Thursday night, partied in Atlanta on Sunday, flew to Baltimore on Monday, and now today in New York City. Man, it's my pleasure to welcome on the Royals Senior Vice President and Assistant General Manager, Scott Sharp. Scott, thank you very much for the time tonight. Congratulations on what must be just the wildest road trip you've ever been a part of.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Vern. Yeah, it's been really crazy, but I really wouldn't trade it for anything, to be quite honest with you.
The word I keep coming back to is execution by this team. On the mound, I'm just talking in those two games in Baltimore, on the mound, in the field, on the base pass, at the plate. What aspect of those wins in Baltimore stood out the most to you?
Well, I think it really started in D.C. because this team's relentless. I mean, we got punched in the face. We had our worst home stand of the year and the last one. We got swept out of the city, and we knew when we went to D.C., look, man, we played so hard. At that point, we're 156 games into the season. We had 6 left, and all we could do was get up off the mat and give it our best effort. We went into D.C., and we swept them, which is pretty much what we knew we had to do, because we had the Braves that last weekend. At that point, we had Sale on Sunday against Reagans. The rest of the weekend was going to be tough. We also knew that if we made it in the playoffs, we wanted to do our best to keep Cole and Seth as our first two starters in the wild card round. So it was relentlessness from the time we left Kansas City and got to D.C. Execution, like you said, once we got to Baltimore. I think really it was, we got to exhale in Atlanta, and we knew, all right, look, the season, we got it. We're in the playoffs. We're ready to roll. We know we can perform. We know we got talent. Now we're in. Now let's go execute and produce.
It was just that final box, right? Just punching that ticket allowed these guys to exhale.
Absolutely. I mean, you could see it. you know, look, when Vinny got injured, you know, your whole team doesn't revolve around one guy. Let's be honest. Like, we have a lot of talent on the team, but it sucked the emotion out of the team a little bit. And we got beat up a little bit in September, and then we started to get our momentum back and we started to get our moxie back. And we knew, like, all right, look, we worked too hard for, you know, to let one sort of off month kill this thing. And once we got in Friday night, you got a lot of emotions out. It was an odd one because he had to sit in the clubhouse and wait, and you had another team that had to lose for us to get in on that given night because we didn't win that night. A lot of exhale, a lot of enthusiasm that we knew, look, we got 2 days to wind down the regular season and get ready for the playoffs and get going.
Royals Assistant General Manager Scott Sharp, kind enough to join us tonight on 96.5 The Fan, as we get you ready for Saturday's Game 1 in the Bronx. I want to ask about Bobby Witt Jr., but it's so wild. The thing I get asked about most lately is this bullpen, and I understand this answer might take a while, but when you look at that group, can you describe the credit in which is due to the coaching staff, and maybe highlight a guy or two that has impressed you with their growth over the course of this season?
Sure. Well, look, first and foremost, all the credit goes to the players, right? They're the guys that put the uniform on. They're the guys that go out. They're the ones that swing the bat, throw the ball. They do it. But we have tremendous coaches. We have guys that really want our players to get better. That come alongside of them, that have individual plans, that are looking at every aspect of a player's performance and trying to get those guys better. Look, I'll be really candid. The guys that I'm most impressed with recently here is what Angel Zerpa has done since he came back from AAA and what Daniel Lynch has done since he's been up. Those two guys have put so much life in the bullpen. When we lost Will Smith, we lost Chris Stratton, and we were able to replace them with guys that stepped in and have been nothing short of dominant since they've been in the bullpen. It's been really impressive. You know, obviously, since the trade, Lucas has been outstanding and continues to be every night. He was extremely impressive, probably his two best outings of the year in the playoffs, just filthy stuff in really tight games with, a really intense environment. Just a really impressive group. Chris Bubich coming back in a different role, doing what he's done the entire time in the bullpen. Can't say enough about those guys.
7 2/3 innings of two-hit relief thus far in the postseason for the Royals bullpen. You mentioned Vinny Pasquantino. You've seen a lot of gutty performances over the years just from Salvi alone. But what does what Vinny's doing right now, a month after surgery, where does that rank? How do you put that into words?
It's hard to put into words. I mean, you know, just watching him every day and work, and sometimes it's minor stuff, right? The first couple of weeks after surgery, he couldn't do a whole lot, but it's every day in there getting multiple rounds of treatment before he could ever even put a bat back in his hand. But he was, you know, he had a bat in his top hand, and he was swinging one-handed with that before he could ever put the bottom hand back on there. He never lost sight of the fact that I know this team's going to the playoffs, and when October rolls around, I'm going to do whatever I can. Until they tell me I can't, I'm going to do whatever I can to be ready. And obviously, guys really rallied around it. It extends our lineup out, puts somebody in between Bobby and Salvi. Just the handedness and his presence. You can see the way the Orioles pitched him. For a guy who, you know, is 4 weeks out of surgery, they pitched him like he was in midseason form, and they should have because he swung the bat really well.
Were you surprised with the way that they showed Vinny that respect by pitching to Bobby the way that they did?
A little bit, but at the same time, you know, somebody asked me this question, and look, it was Corbin Burnes the first night, and it's right. Look, we got Corbin Burnes and you got Bobby Witt, our best player against your best player or one of your best players. And that's what baseball's about. And they felt like, look, I'm going to roll with our guy. And they lost on that one, right? Bobby got him. That's what the game's about. You know, Bobby didn't have two great at-bats, his first two at-bats. So maybe they thought that was some sort of trend. But your best players step up in big moments. And obviously the next night it's Cano and they pitch to him again. And Bobby does the same thing. So I'm fine with him continuing to pitch to Bobby. That's great. Sure.
Yeah. No doubt, me too. Scott Sharp, kind enough to join us, Royals Senior Vice President and Assistant General Manager. Speaking of Bobby, in what ways does he still surprise you?
Just that no moment seems, I mean, he's 24 years old, no moment seems too big. I mean, yeah. Even just some of the things he says, you know, it's so remarkable to hear somebody who has so much talent to, you know, sort of take himself back to his childhood. Like, oh, I used to watch the celebrations. I used to buy the shirts. You know, now I get to wear them. His enthusiasm and his love for just being a baseball player, you see it every day, but then you just, it's so real and it's so authentic. It just comes through. The bigger the moment, the more it comes through.
It is. It's something else. It's well said. Moving ahead, looking at this upcoming ALDS, I know conversations are still ongoing among the front office, but what are those roster conversations right now? Are you expecting any changes come Saturday?
Well, we'll meet tomorrow, and you know, obviously, we can do whatever we need to do to reset the roster. You know, that's the luxury you have in between these rounds. I will say that this year, and it may have been last year as well, but in this five-game series, it is a game, a day off, a game, a day off, and then a day off and a game. So it allows you to potentially just use three starters. You could use four if you wanted, but it lines up very well that you can try to run three starters out if you so choose. So we'll have those conversations tomorrow. We'll continue you know, to look through the matchups. You know, we're fortunate enough in some capacity that we played the Yankees 2 weeks ago. So, you know, there's recent history. You know, Baltimore, we played in April. We were done in April. So, you know, it's we had to relearn Baltimore a little bit. New York, we got more familiarity. So the roster construction, you know, should maybe flow a little bit easier. But we'll get through that tomorrow. And then, you know, we announce the roster on Saturday morning.
Is tomorrow also the first time you guys will get into whether or not you're going to pitch to Aaron Judge?
Yeah, I mean, we'll break it down. Again, you know, we were fortunate enough to see him 2 weeks ago, understand the pitching plan that we had then, and obviously they got other guys in the lineup, Juan Soto as well, that you got to be fearful of. I mean, the thing that I think we did really well, for the most part, not every inning, but for the most part in Baltimore, is if when they're 2-3, 3-4, 5, whatever their best hitter combination is, when those guys come to the plate, if there is no one on, you're in a really good spot. The worst thing that can happen is a solo home run. Now, it was Mullins yesterday, but the idea is the same, right? Like, a solo home run shouldn't beat you. But when you start to compound it by walking the nine-hole hitter or giving up a single in front of the big hitter, that's what we have to eliminate. That's what guys were so good at, both Cole and Seth. And then when they did get in trouble, you know, both of those guys really made some highly important executed pitches in very stressful situations.
Royal Senior Vice President and Assistant General Manager Scott Sharp, kind enough to join us. Scott, without gushing too much, the job that you and the rest of the front office have done over the past 2 years is nothing short of remarkable, and the city will say thank you coming up on Wednesday. But on behalf of the fan base, great job, and thanks for October baseball.
Well, I appreciate it. You know, once we got in, our biggest goal was to get a game back in Kansas City. Obviously now, you know, we're pushing. We're going to do everything we can every night to keep winning. You got 11 more till the end goal. But the biggest thing is we wanted the fans in Kansas City to have a playoff game or more than one back at the K.
I don't know how anybody sleeps for the rest of the month, but best of luck getting some sleep. Scott, thank you very much for the time tonight.
Thanks, Vern. Appreciate it.
There you go. Scott Sharp, Royals Senior Vice President, Assistant General Manager, the right-hand man to Royals GM J.J. Piccolo, the brain trust that has turned a 106-loss season into a team that I'm ready to go to battle for against those New York Yankees. Coming up, sometimes things are just meant to be, and this series in New York was just meant to be. I'll explain why after this. All right, welcome back. Josh Vernier with you here, your 96.5 The Fan Royals insider. A Royals celebration as we get you ready for Game 1 of the ALDS. Saturday night right here. First pitch at 5:38 for those men and women that go by military time. Nurses out there, of course, military men and women. 17:38 for the first pitch coming up on Saturday. I'll have the on-deck show beginning at 16:38. I'll be on the air at 4:30. How about that? And then game two comes your way on Monday, and you'll hear that game on The Fan AM 610 as Chiefs-Saints Monday Night Football here on 96.5 The Fan. Thanks again to Royals Assistant General Manager Scott Sharp, and it got me thinking. Man, as I look at this team, and I look ahead to 2025, I'll be honest, I'm more concerned about executives and coaches leaving than I am players. Because for the most part, you're not losing all that much off this team. Michael Wacha has a decision to make. I don't think it's a very difficult decision. I think you turn down that $16 million and you hit free agency. But other than Michael Wacha, you know, maybe you pay Adam Frazier $2.5 million and he exits stage left. Okay, so you lose Adam Frazier, Tommy Pham, Garrett Hampson to free agency. Paul DeJong and Robbie Grossman and Yuli Gurriel are likely on their way out. Michael Lorenzen, it's been real. But I feel as if guys like Scott Sharp and J.J. Piccolo, with at least what they've shown us over the past 18 months, I believe they can replace those guys. Can you replace that brain trust? Can you replace what's going on inside that dugout right now? Did you see the embrace between Q and his coaching staff after they clinched that one yesterday? Man, how about this moment inside the clubhouse? Matt Quatrero with Rob Collins of Fox 4.
When you look around this room, man, how does this make you feel?
Man, it's inspiring. It's emotional. These guys pour their heart and soul into this, man, and it's so inspiring to be a part of it. And, I mean, I love these guys.
It's a great video. I recommend you go check out the work that Rob Collins did in Baltimore. Some great videos from inside that celebratory Royals clubhouse. But watching that emotion there from Matt Quatrero made me a touch emotional when it hit me that he, yes, is going to New York, will manage in his third postseason game against the team that he grew up rooting for, or at least following, right? The 1980s New York Yankees teams, right? When George punched Nettles, Q was side of Nettles, now obviously on the side of George Brett. But what also hit me and what also got me choked up, just as a son that loves his mom and is thankful that she's still with us, Q lost his mother in August. And when he would describe her personality, toughness, Q would always mention how, even though they grew up in Yankees country, she was always rooting for whoever was playing the Yankees. She was always anti-Yankee in a Yankee nation. Now, you understand. Now he's the guy playing the New York Yankees. So now his mom from above is rooting for his Kansas City Royals team like she has been for years. Man, Q's an easy guy to root for. Going to New York, facing that team with his mom looking down on him. Boy, if that doesn't get you even more juiced up to cheer for this team, to get out there Wednesday, maybe get out there on Thursday, I don't know what will. Coming up, nobody's closer to this Royals team than Annie Rogers of MLB.com. She tells us how Bobby Witt Jr. has grown over the years and over the seasons. That's coming up next. back, Royals fans. Josh Fergie with you here, 96.5 The Fan. Your home for Royals baseball. I appreciate you listening all season long, before, after the game. Don't forget, if you ever miss the post-game show, you can subscribe to the All Things Vern podcast. Find the All Things Vern podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Well, we just heard Patrick Mahomes right there shouting out 96.5 The Fan, and you'll hear the GOAT coming up on Monday night. A reminder, Royals fans, game two of the ALDS. Cole Reagans going opposites fellow Southpaw Carlos Rodon. That game starts up at 6:38 on Monday night, and you'll hear that game over on The Fan AM 610. Because again, Chiefs, Saints, Monday Night Football right here on 96.5 The Fan. So, Chiefs right here, Royals only game two, Monday night over on The Fan AM 610. Does that make sense? Did I say that properly? I read it. Maybe I didn't read it properly. I assume you know what I'm talking about. Patrick Mahomes knows what I'm talking about. I'm talking about playoff baseball. Has Patrick Mahomes ever been to a playoff game?
I've been to a postseason baseball game. Back when I was in high school, the Rangers made the World Series a couple of times. And so I got to see him lose, I think, game five, I think, against the Giants one year. And then I watched them lose, or maybe win the game that I was at, when they went up against the Phillies, and they ended up losing in game six on that ball on the warning track. So, I mean, I've had some close heartbreaks there with the Rangers, but the Royals are going to turn it around for me.
There you go. Yeah, and you have to think Patrick's in the building with his family coming up on Wednesday, and if Thursday's necessary, right? There's going to be a Mahomes suite. How many other Chiefs make their way into that Mahomes suite? Do we get an Andy Reid? Do we see Big 8-7, 9-5? Do we see T-Swizz? How much is Kauffman Stadium about to pop off coming up starting on Wednesday night? I'm excited, man. I've been waiting for that explosion of Royals baseball all summer long. I think I just needed to wait to October, because I'm expecting this city to be on fire coming up for that game on Wednesday. Patrick's right there with me.
It's awesome. I mean, it's great for the city. I mean, I've heard all the stories about how awesome the environment was the last time they were in the playoffs, and they're going to go up against a great baseball team in the Yankees, historic baseball team. And so I'm just excited for these guys. I mean, they're hungry. They're playing great baseball right now. To be at the K, a sold-out crowd, hopefully, and get to see that October baseball there is going to be special.
Yeah, that hopefully has me somewhat concerned. There's no way it's not going to be a sellout coming up on Wednesday. And yes, I realize it was not a sellout in Baltimore for game two. Couldn't even get 39,000 to show up. No reason, no wonder why your team can't get out of its own way. Speaking of Baltimore and the issues that organization has had, especially against Kansas City come the postseason, how many souls did Bobby Witt Jr. snatch while he was in Baltimore? I totaled it up. I think it's north of six. I'll explain exactly how Bobby went in from the front office to the coaching staff to the players on the field and destroyed that Orioles organization. I'll dive into that, and Annie Rogers will join us after this. Waiting for the beat to drop. Didn't come. Welcome back. Happy to have you here. Happy to be here. Blue October 2024. I don't know many people that saw that coming. Certainly not in spring. I know there were a handful of you that as early as the fifth game, seventh game of the season, called up the post-game show and said, Vern, we're never losing. Or, we're never going to have a losing record. Nobody said they were going to go 162-0. I believe that was like eight or nine games in. Gentleman calls in, says Royals will never fall below 500, and they never did. For the degenerates out there, the Mets Brewers are scoreless in the bottom of the second inning. As far as how many souls did Bobby snatch in Baltimore, I think it's at least six, could be seven. Brandon Hyde, the manager of the Orioles, allowed Bobby Witt Jr. to beat him twice. Now, I don't blame it all on the skipper, right? Corbin Burns. You wanted Bobby. You got Bobby. And in that battle of lions, Bobby Witt Jr. comes out on top. So Brandon Hyde, the manager, Bobby owns you now. Corbin Burns, I'm sorry you belong to Bobby. Yiner Cano is who Bobby picked up his other game-winning RBI against. So he now belongs to the Bobby Witt Jr. family, honestly. Gunnar Henderson. What did Gunnar Henderson do? Does anyone know if Gunnar Henderson did anything in that series? I see an 0-for-4 with three punch-outs yesterday, and I saw an 0-for-3 with a punch-out in Game 1. Now, this was a guy that I sat right here and said he should start the All-Star game because of the numbers that he was putting up, because the Orioles were in first place, and I stand by that. But Bobby Witt Jr. was obviously annoyed by that because he dropped it into gear and left Gunner and every single other shortstop in Major League Baseball in his dust. Josh Vernier with you here, teamed up with JT Noah as we take you up until 8 o'clock tonight. Another name that I think now belongs to Bobby Witt Jr. is whoever that man or woman is that's behind the social media account for the Baltimore Orioles. You now belong to Bobby. And Adley Rutschman, the individual that was selected number one over Bobby Witt Jr. Did you hear this earlier today from Dan O'Dowd, former big league general manager?
Yeah, I love looking back at drafts. To me, I just love the whole drafting process. And so Adley Rutschman and Bobby Witt Jr. went 1 and 2 in 2019. And so if you have revisionist history, you know, how would they go now? Like if you're Mike Elias and watching that series right there, thinking about we had a chance at drafting Bobby Witt Jr. And then Henderson went in that same year, so they would have got Witt and Henderson in the same draft. Now think about it from Kansas City standpoint, they would not be close to being the same team.
Yes.
If the Orioles had selected, and they would have taken Rutschman too.
Yep.
And but it's just not the same impact for their club anyway.
I just want to throw in that Rutschman was the number one catcher in the sport coming into the season too. So it's one season before he's been hurt, he got hit in the hand. So
I'm not saying they didn't make a good selection. It's just a really interesting look at the two profiles athletically of the position and how their careers are going to progress.
So Bobby Witt Jr. has played an additional 54 career games than Adley Rutschman. Rutschman 2 years older than Bobby. Junior's run into 30 more home runs and has an OPS plus of 131. Adley Rutschman, an OPS of 121. As promised, joining us right now, the beat writer for your Kansas City Royals from MLB.com, Annie Rogers, kind enough to join us from, Annie, Baltimore, New York. Where are you right now?
I made it up to New York this morning, so we're on city number 4 in the last 10 days. So don't ask me my hotel room number because I have absolutely no idea.
Well, what are the snapshots you're going to take with you from that series in Baltimore? What's going to stick with you?
I mean, it's the easy answer, but man, the pitching. And Vern, you and I have been through a lot, watched a lot of Royals baseball these past couple of years. Can you imagine in 2022 or 2023 we're saying the Royals won a postseason series because of their pitching? I mean, it's just that's what sticks out more than anything. It's just the turnaround of this team in general, the pitching staff. It's really incredible. So that sticks out. The celebration was rowdier, more exciting in Baltimore too. The Royals were excited to move on to New York, so it's going to be a fun series up here in New York and finally getting to play a baseball back at BK.
Speaking of that pitching, three arms were not used outside of Michael Wacha, Brady Singer, Daniel Lynch, Michael Lorenzen. Of those three, who do you think this coaching staff is most confident in a big spot out of the bullpen? Singer, Lynch, Michael Lorenzen, what's your feel?
Well, my first thought is Lorenzen because of his experience, but given the way that Daniel Lynch has ended the season on that scoreless streak, the confidence just rising as every time we saw him on the mound. That's kind of a secret weapon for me. I don't know, against lefties. I mean, you have a lot of lefties in your bullpen already, but having him come out and maybe picking up multiple innings, there's a lot of confidence there in him. And then you talk about Brady and his competitiveness. I think that gives you some confidence as well. But if I had to choose, I mean, honestly, it's Daniel Lynch for me, just because of kind of flipping the script from starter to reliever and watching what he did at the end of the season.
There's another thing in 2022 I never thought I would hear anybody say, but I'm glad to hear it. I'm happy for DL Swag.
Annie Rogers. That's right.
Annie Rogers of MLB.com, Royals beat writer, Mizzou grad, kind enough to join us here on 96.5 The Fan. Nobody's closer to this team. Nobody's closer to Bobby Witt Jr. in the media than you are, Annie. How have you seen him grow or change over the course of this season, over the course of this month, whether it's on the field or off? Is there an anecdote that stands out?
Seeing the genuine joy on his face when he's celebrating these past two clinch celebrations that I've now seen him in, you know, you knew that he'd be excited. You knew that whatever he does, it's genuine. Like, it's true Bobby Witt Jr. But honestly, just seeing the smile on his face and hearing, like, the emotion in his voice when I talk to him, that's really what stands out to me. Because, you know, you see Bobby on the field and all that he can do, and obviously he's been pegged to lead this franchise into the next, you know, generation and leave a legacy here. But watching him be as happy as he has been, it's really cool, honestly, to have that much just pure emotion from your star player. And, you know, everything he says, you know, you really believe. So yeah. That's really what has stood out to me more than anything the past week or so.
Yeah, it's well said. There is just not a jaded bone in his body, which is remarkable because all of us in the press box are quite jaded. Speaking of that, I'm wondering your thoughts on Brandon Hyde's allowance of his pitchers to pitch to Bobby Witt Jr. and how you think the Royals will handle a similar situation with Aaron Judge.
It's a really tough situation. The first night against Burns, I did understand it. I understood the argument against it, of course, but I just, you know, I feel like if you've got your best guy on the mound, you know, facing the other team's best hitter, like, you want that matchup. You're going to go with your guy in all those situations, especially Burns, because he's such a veteran and he's been so good, and he pitched his tail off that game too. Game two, you've got to win. You've got to win that game, and there he is again, your star player, you know, the opposing team's star player up to the plate in the same scenario. And you make a pitching change, of course, but you don't put him on. That's where I kind of get a little iffy. I probably would have put him on. And, you know, that's the decision that the Royals are going to have to face now with Judge. And that's the benefit of the Yankees having Soto right behind him.
Yeah, no question. Annie Rogers, MLB.com. If you're a Royals fan, you must subscribe to her newsletter. Find it at MLB.com. Find it at Royals.com. So now the series starts coming up on Saturday. And Annie, I mentioned this a moment ago, and, you know, I can get sappy sometimes, but, you know, Matt Quatrero being at Yankee Stadium, I mean, I remember him telling the story about his mom a few weeks ago about how his mom would always root for the team playing against the New York Yankees, and now it's her son in the playoffs playing against the Yankees. It really, you know, you know him. He's an easy guy to root for. He's a down-to-earth person. Why do you think he works so well with this group of players?
I think just because, you know, exactly what you said, he is so easygoing and he is so down to earth. You know, they love him in there, and just the way that he walks around the clubhouse, doesn't go in when he doesn't need to be, but, you know, just walks around and is totally himself with these guys. And I think back to last year when, you know, they were losing a lot early in the year, and we were kind of all of us were like, what is going on? When is he going to show some emotion here? Like, he needs to get fired up. He needs to get these guys back on track. But he was never going to do that. And I remember so clearly when someone, I think maybe it was Vahe, the Star columnist, asked him, like, kind of straight up, why don't you get fiery? And he was like, that's not me. And no matter what, no matter where the Royals go or how high they go, how low they go, he's always going to be the same person. And the team has absolutely fed off of that this year. They brought veteran players in to show the way with that mentality. The younger players have embraced that mentality, but it all starts with Matt Cotrero and his today focus, his today mentality. That has not changed from last year to this year. He's the same exact person, and I think that's a huge reason for the Royals' success.
Nobody more plugged in than you, Annie, so I'm curious, and you would report it if you were hearing something, but do you believe that this front office or this coaching staff will have an individual or two plucked from it at season's end?
I think you got to look, right? I think you've got to have those conversations because of what they've done. Front office, for sure, those guys have been through a lot of different things. Many of those executives have held different roles in their front office over the years. I think that's a huge benefit to another team. And then obviously the turnaround that they've had, the growth that they've had, written a lot about it just over the past year. I think there's a lot of benefit to hiring someone from this organization now, and the coaching staff too. I think there will be people who get a look at, you know, Zach Bove comes to mind, the assistant pitching coach, just everything that he's done with these pitchers. I think Paul Hoover is a good managerial candidate someday, maybe not this offseason, but someday. So I think that the Royals are going to be on a list for a lot of teams looking for new faces, just because of what they've done over the past 2 years.
And excited to read your work coming up, leading up to Saturday's game, and of course following the contest. I'm curious, before you start pumping everything out there from New York, do you have a favorite secondary storyline for this series outside of who wins and who loses?
Yeah, there's a lot of fun storylines, I think, and actually wrote about it today, just going back to the late 70s, early 80s, that rivalry. And, you know, obviously I was not alive during that, so I had to do a lot of research and watched a lot of video after talking to George, George Brett, who was happy to talk to me about his hatred of the Yankees. So that was a fun interview to do. And I think we're going to see some throwback moments on the video boards of, you know, on TV and everything like that. I think that's kind of a fun little, like, side storyline to all this. You've obviously got Judge versus Witt. You've got the big Yankees versus the small market Royals. But kind of throwing it back to that rivalry, you know, it's pretty fun to look into if you don't know anything about it.
No question about it. It's almost a different game. I mean, it's only, I guess it's 50 years ago, but you watch it and it looks like a completely different game.
The best thing I found was, and this is probably to those listening who lived it, this is not surprising, but like George Brett's fight against Nettles at third base. Yeah. They just went back to playing the game.
Yeah.
They literally had an all-out brawl. George Brett punched Nettles in the face, and he just stood on third afterwards. And then, you know, they just continued playing the game. That was in the first inning. I'm like, you can't, it would never happen. Never happen, obviously, like that. Wouldn't even get to that point this, you know, in 2024. But that was just the funniest thing to me. It was normal.
No, they'd be villains. They'd be the talk of SportsCenter and sports radio all over the country. It's a... Boys will be boys, as they say, Annie. I know you love Boys Will Be Boys. Annie,
yes,
thank you very much for the time. Thank you very much for the time tonight. Keep up the great work. We'll be following along on MLB.com. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me, Vern.
There you go. Annie Rogers, the best in the business. Nobody's closer to this team than Annie. Make sure you're following her on all social media platforms, and of course the best synopsis of whatever's going on with the boys in blue, you know, it's her putting pen to pad. Coming up after a quick timeout, Steve Stewart was in the Royals clubhouse for yesterday's celebration, just like he was a decade ago in, well, Kansas City, I guess, is where they knocked off the Angels and knocked off the Orioles. My point being, Steve Stewart's had a lot of champagne spilled on top of his head. We'll find out how the champagne from this October compares. That's next. Hey. Feeling good. Right, we're feeling good on a Thursday, right? Kansas City, how could you not feel good? And honestly, this is, as a sports fan, no, forget as a sports fan. This is the greatest time to be alive. Bam. Come on. Yeah, as a sports fan, obviously, but where else would you rather be right now? Undefeated football team, a red hot ball club, and they both go at it coming up on Monday night. Don't forget, Royals, Yankees, game one comes your way on Saturday. First pitch, 5:35 right here on 96.5 The Fan. I'll be on the air with the On Deck Show beginning at 4 o'clock. Game two, Monday night, will be on our sister station, The Fan AM 610, because, well, one of the owners of the Kansas City Royals is, he's dealing with his day job. He's going to take on the New Orleans Saints Monday Night Football this upcoming Monday right here on 96.5 The Fan. Thanks again to Annie Rogers of MLB.com. Love her work. Always does a great job. One of the hardest working beat writers I've ever been around. But right before she joined us, you heard what the former general manager Dan O'Dowd had to say about Baltimore's decision to take Adley Rutschman number one overall. I told you there were six bodies that were claimed by Bobby Witt Jr. while in Baltimore. It might be seven. I might have to put their general manager, Mike Elias, in that Bobby Witt Jr. body bag as well. Now, I'm not going to knock Adley Rutschman. He's one of the three best catchers in the game and what a true leader. Switch hitter, he's a great player. But there's just no way, even if he wasn't dealing with whatever nagging soreness he was dealing with in that series, you take the shortstop, right? And could you imagine that 2019 draft, if the Orioles did indeed take Bobby number one and then take Gunnar Henderson later, and they have a left side of the infield with Bobby and Gunnar? I don't know what the Royals would have done with, well, yes, I do know what they would have done with Adley Rutschman. They would have probably traded Salvador Perez. So, yeah, Mike Elias, man, you did us a solid if he was the guy that picked Adley overall number one. Wow. Could you? Text line 913-586-7965. That's the text line number. We'll take your thoughts throughout the night. As Bobby Witt Jr., two games into his postseason career, has two game-winning knocks in his back pocket, something that only he and the Hall of Famer Jimmy Fox can say. Well, kind enough to join us right now, the voice of the Kansas City Royals. Each and every night, you'll hear him coming up on Saturday, beginning at 5:38 right here on 96.5 The Fan. He's the one and only Steve Stewart. Stu, man, we were just talking about it with Annie Rogers and Scott Sharp. This road trip that started 10 days ago in Washington now has you in the Big Apple. When did you first see this team and say, you know what, I could find myself in the ALDS at some point?
Well, you know, it's funny. We were here, Vern, great to be with you, of course, from NYC. But we were here, what, about 3 weeks ago, a little more than that, when the Royals played the Yankees at that Yankee-Pittsburgh road trip. And Bob Costas did the last game of that series on MLB Network from the booth right next to where we were sitting. And, you know, I've always idolized the guy and been lucky enough to meet him a few times. I was talking to him before the game, and he said, you know, he goes, it's possible I'm going to do another series with you guys if you guys come back here for the division series. You know, he said it almost like matter-of-factly. At that point, I'm like, you mean the Royals are going to be in the playoffs and everything? You know, because at that point, you know, it was kind of up and down. And, we figured we were going to be wild card, but you just don't know, right? You have no idea. And even if you do get the wild card, where are you going to go if you win that round? And And sure enough, here we are 3 weeks later in New York City, and he's doing the series on television, Denny and company doing it on radio. And it's just fantastic. I mean, this group, you know, you see every single game, every pitch, just like we all do. And to see it come together the way it has, especially the bullpen recently, the way the whole team has been so together all year. You saw it even in spring training when they were just kind of getting to know each other, and it's grown as the year's gone along. And today we took the train ride, rode the train up from Baltimore up here to New York City, and a couple days till the game. I know they'll have a big workout media day tomorrow, but they're ready. I mean, the Yankees are, we know they're like maybe the best team, who knows, on terms of paper, in terms of talent, certainly in terms of salaries and all that stuff. But this team will give them a fight.
Steve Stewart joining us here on 96.5 The Fan. Let's go back to yesterday, Stu. Take us inside that victorious clubhouse. What images stand out to you? What are you going to take with you?
Well, you know, we've been lucky enough to be in a lot of these celebrations the last decade or so, right? We had 8 of them in 2 years, 14 and 15. So I feel like, and I had been with some previously, but this year, I mean, just the joy, you know, it's a little bit like 14 in the joy. And like, wow, look where we are, you know, having not been here before for a lot of these guys. Now, there are a lot of veterans that have been in the postseason. But obviously Bobby with the double-fisted hat he had on. And seeing Vinny, you know, Vinny is a very, we all know, he's like Mr. Personality. He lights up a room. He's great for people in our business because he's a great speaker and great at expressing his thoughts. But there was a humbleness about him, like he was – I almost sense like he was just grateful, so grateful to be back and be able to contribute again. And boy, did he. I mean, my goodness, he really kind of looks like he hasn't missed any time. It's amazing how quickly he's come back and how normal things look for him. And hopefully it'll only get better for him now that he's got a couple games under his belt, hopefully a little more healing each day, each couple of days, who knows. Lucas Ursig, who's, you know, we all have our roller coasters in life, and he certainly had his, and he gets traded and then kind of, you know, gets pushed to the back of the bullpen, and which he definitely has shown now he's the right guy for. But it's just been a lot on his shoulders in a short period of time. And I feel like he's kind of grown into this role. I mean, he's kind of made for this role of, you know, yep, give me the end of the game. I'll take care of it. You know, but and yet not in a cocky way, but a confident right. way, definitely. And talking to him, and big old stogie in his hand, and just very confident and very grateful to be here. I asked him, I said, I guarantee you, Lucas, everybody listening to us right now on the radio is very happy you're a Royal now. Yeah. How do you feel about it? And of course, he was gushing about just how much he really enjoys the group and the vibe. And I think everybody on this team, no matter where they are in their career, and their age and all that kind of stuff, I think they really enjoy this group that's together right now. And, you know, everything changes a little bit year to year. You hope not too much for next year, unless it's for the better. But this is a really tight group and just really happy to be together. And to, you know, last year, Texas won the World Series on the path the Royals are on right now. It doesn't mean it's going to happen. But remember, the Rangers, in their case, they had a chance to win their division right at the end of the year. They didn't in Seattle, so they had to go. They had to fly across country from Seattle to Tampa Bay to play the wild card. They swept that. Then they went to Baltimore for the division series in their case, and they beat them on their way to the World Series. The Royals kind of started that path of being on the road and then going to the wild card on the road, sweeping that, and now a division series. So we'll see where it takes us. But it's just a joy to be around these guys.
Well, being on the road, being in the Big Apple where we talk to you now, being at Yankee Stadium in October, I mean, the baseball fan inside of you, what memories come to mind for you?
Well, I'm old enough that I remember 1980, and I remember the Royals and Yankees series in the late 70s, and it was just unbelievable. I mean, to see George and that group, George was such a superstar at that time. In America, in American sports, in American pop culture, and obviously the Yankees under George Steinbrenner had come back in that time, and they were kind of reestablishing their brand. And man, it was just unforgettable. And to think it's 44 years, and to have Denny on the call, which he was on the call back in those days as well here in New York, I just think it's just so cool. 40, 44 years later for the Royals to play them in the playoffs.
Eric Hosmer had a pretty big moment at Yankee Stadium in his career. I believe had his first career home run in the Big Apple.
Right.
Hosmer now all over social media telling anybody that will listen he doesn't want the Royals to throw Aaron Judge a single strike. He doesn't want to see Aaron Judge swing the bat once. This was obviously a big discussion with Bobby and Brandon Hyde in Baltimore. Stu, how do you feel about working around someone, you know, in the biggest moments, or as Haas is claiming should happen, don't pitch to him at all?
Wow. You know, that's funny saying that because obviously Soto comes up before him, and he's such a beast too. You know, I know that the numbers, at least the past, which is never going to necessarily predict the future, but the numbers of the, of, you know, Waka and Reagans and, of course, Lugo, if they're the first three, their numbers collectively against Aaron Judge have been really impressive. Like, he's done almost nothing against those guys. Doesn't mean he can't hit them here. I don't know. You know, I really think it depends on the game situation, of course.
Right.
Now, maybe he's talking about in a close game sort of situation or a one run behind or one run ahead, don't let him beat you. I totally get that. And, you know, Eric, you know, having played as long as he has, I mean, he knows a lot more baseball than I ever would. But I just think it's situationally dependent. And, you know, Matt Quatrero has made so many of the right moves. It feels like he pushes the right buttons every night. And now sometimes you don't get the result you want. And, you know, a fan's going to quibble with this move or that move. But last night was another example of making the right moves at the right time. And I'm putting trust in Q in that one. But
no question.
You know, I think I wouldn't be surprised to see the Royals work around him at times. But I'll tell you what, the way this pitching staff is going right now, they look like they could strike anybody out right now, even Superman.
Now, you alluded to it. Aaron Judge, 1-for-28 lifetime against the trio of Lugo, Waka, and Cole Reagans. We're pleased to be joined by Steve Stewart, Royals broadcaster, here on 96.5 The Fan. We got to talk about Bobby Witt Jr. You've watched every game he's played in. How does he and does he still amaze you?
Yes. In a word, he does. And, you know, and you've talked to him a lot. You know how humble a guy he is. I think the fans sense that whether they've met him or not. He's just so down to earth. And, you know, as you know, sometimes a young superstar isn't really comfortable talking about his own accomplishments. Bobby is kind of coming out of his shell more and more as he gets more interviews and gets more airtime and gets a wider audience. Even his interviewing ability is getting better now. But I remember interviewing him a couple of years ago in his rookie year when he was really good. I mean, you know, he was good right out of the gate. But obviously he got better last year, and he's been even better this year. And if you ask Alex Zumwalt, his hitting coach, about it, he just expects him to get better and better, which is great for the Royals and scary for the rest of the league. I just think that for him, it's just everything he does. Again, he would be humble enough to say, yes, I have things to work on. His plate discipline's gotten better. His defense has gotten better. His situational awareness has got better. He knows he's got to continue to work on the base running element because he's got the speed. But I guarantee he's going to get better at that. He's going to make fewer outs on the bases as he goes along in this game. So he just keeps getting better. And I just couldn't be more impressed by the person. You know, he was raised right. His parents obviously did a great job. He just fits in like a glove with whoever the least talented player, the player that gets the least amount of playing time. He doesn't act any bigger than that guy. And he's just that kind of person. And I think that's one of many reasons why it's easy for the Royals fans to fall in love with the guy.
I'm so happy you said that, Stu. Sometimes doing the pregame and the postgame, I'll feel like I'm kissing up a little bit too much or laying it on thick with Bobby Witt Jr. But as I mentioned, you've seen every one of his games. I talked with Annie Rogers. She's covered every one of his games. I talked with Scott Sharp. He's known him since he was in high school. And when I ask about what amazes you when it comes to the 24-year-old likely MVP runner-up, everyone talks about the personality, the humility, the childlike enthusiasm that he takes with him on the field every single day. I mean, he has the joy of a 12-year-old, but the body of the greatest shortstop I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, the throwing arm. I mean, he's like this. You're not old enough to remember the first run of the $6 million man. But I mean, it's like if you feel like there's nothing he can't do. And again, he just wants to get better. That's part of the humbleness too. I was talking about interviewing a couple of years ago, and I was getting better at that, even the interview aspect. But when, you know, I would ask him as a younger player, you know, what are you trying to improve on? What are you working on? Everybody's always working on something. He would just say everything. Right. You know, I'm thinking, well, great answer. Thanks a lot. Thanks for going so in depth with me there. And yet that's what he's doing. I mean, you know, he dove into, you know, before last season, you could tell in the off season, he dove headfirst into working on his shortstop defense and got better at that and secured that position. And this year, I mean, part of it is because they're working around him, but he's at least double, maybe, I don't know if he's tripled his number of walks from a year ago, and showing them patience. And if they're not going to throw you a strike, then at least get on base. And he's doing that. So it feels like there's nothing he's not getting better at.
Final thing for you, Stu, outside of the win, loss, Bobby, Aaron Judge dynamic, is there a secondary storyline that you're excited for?
You know, the Yankees have some great pitching, obviously, and some really big names, but I'm really excited about the Royals pitching, and I'm particularly excited about this bullpen. I mean, we remember, most fans listening remember, the bullpen in 14 was great, in 15 it was even better and deeper. And this bullpen, in 6 months, the way it's evolved into what it is right now, and obviously Urseg's a huge part of it, but so is Bubich, you know, who was still recovering from Tommy John when the season started, and Sam Long, who didn't make the team, was in Omaha when the season started, and Angel Serpa, who we've seen for 3 or 4 years now. I remember seeing him in spring training for the first time with that kind of an electric arm and thinking, my goodness, this guy's a baby. This guy's got boundless possibilities, but kind of a trial and error learning and going to Omaha, coming back, starting, relieving. What is he? And I mean, he's a weapon in the pen. Long is a weapon in the pen. Bubich is a weapon in the pen. Daniel Lynch hasn't even pitched yet. We know he's a weapon in the pen. Michael Lorenzen looked great the other day working a brief outing the other day, and you know, so there's a lot of weapons on this team, and I'm excited about this bullpen. What we saw in Baltimore, the fact that these guys were here in New York 3 weeks ago, and no, it wasn't the playoffs, but it was New York, it was the Yankees, it was big crowds, and so they've at least, you know, they've been in the playoff environment now, they've recently been at this ballpark in this environment, and they're unafraid, and obviously the Yankees are heavily favored, as you'd expect, so you know, America doesn't expect him to win, which is frankly a better spot to be in than America expecting you to win in terms of the pressure. It's all on the Yankees. Doesn't mean the Royals are going to win it, but it's, you know, they definitely have more than a puncher's chance.
It's going to be fun, no doubt about it. Steve Stewart hits the air coming up on Saturday at 5 o'clock on the nose, live from New York City. Stu, I greatly appreciate the time tonight, and enjoy your night, enjoy tomorrow, and we'll be listening coming up on Saturday.
All right, Vern, thanks so much, bud. We'll talk to you soon.
There you go. Steve Stewart, Royals broadcaster, joining us live from the Big Apple. He mentioned Bobby Witt Jr.'s persistent answer of everything, right? I remember that interview that Stu did with Bobby. You know, what's the focus this offseason? What aspect of your game do you want to get better in? And he, as he said, responded with everything. And lo and behold, year in and year out, Bobby shows up and he is better at everything. Earlier this week, he was asked, do you believe you can still get better?
Yeah, I think just by playing more and more games, it just get better. I think just from years to years, from first year, second year, third year, getting better each and every year. And I just want to keep continuing doing that. And I believe I'll keep continually doing that. Just from more experience, you get better. Just from being around the game, you get better. And then just knowing yourself, you get better. Just preparing the way you can prepare, your routines, getting your body right each and every day, and just being able to help perform and just seeing guys around the league, facing other pitchers around the league, and just getting comfortable in the league. And so just being able to do that, I think I'll continually get better each and every year.
I mean, that's a scary thing for the rest of Major League Baseball, but I just love the tenor of his voice there. Very polite, straightforward. Just a very nice 24-year-old. That was pregame, Bobby Witt Jr. What does postgame Bobby Witt Jr. sound like?
Ooh, I got champagne in my eyes. This is nice. This is a lot of fun. We deserve this. We're going to enjoy it. Great team win. Keep going. Like I said, we didn't come this far just to come this far. We're doing this for Kansas City because the past years we haven't been where we want to be. And now we're here, so we got to make the most of it.
Again, that audio courtesy of Rob Collins from Fox 4. How great is this?
Ooh, I got champagne in my eyes. This is nice.
This is nice. Coming up, what type of roster changes can we expect for this series against the Yanks? That's coming up next. Oh, man, that's so silly, but it made me laugh. Welcome back. I'm Josh Fernier. I'm the Royals insider for 96.5 The Fan. Appreciate you listening tonight. For those degenerates out there that are saying, shut up, Bozo, and give me the score. I got a lot of money riding on it. Well, it's scoreless in the fifth. Brewers, Mets, the decisive Game 3, the first ever wild card series to get to a Game 3. Isn't that surprising? Yeah. Well, actually, the second. Now, if the Mets win, the team that wins game one of that wild card series will move to a perfect 12-0. Hey, I want to go back to something that Steve Stewart mentioned when talking about this bullpen and just how different it looks. That is yet another reason why J.J. Piccolo and the rest of that front office deserve some sort of trophy. Now, whether it's the MLB Executive of the Year or it's, you know, is the sporting news around still, I don't know. But they need to get some sort of hardware to put on their desks. Because that front office has revamped that bullpen twice in 12 months. Hey, think about it. The bullpen that ended 2023, that miserable 2023. Not many of those bullpen arms showed up for game one of 2024. And those bullpen arms that were there on day one of the season, not many of them are still in that bullpen as we get ready for game one in New York coming up on Saturday night. Now, game time coming up on Saturday is 5:38. Easier to remember if you follow military time because that will tell you that Saturday's game starts at 17:38. My on-deck show begins at 4:30. Steve Stewart takes over at 5. But twice within a calendar year, this bullpen has been completely flipped. Daniel Lynch, Chris Bubich, Sam Long. Now, those guys were not on the opening day roster. You already know that Lucas Erceg wasn't a part of the opening day roster. Carlos Hernandez, John Schreiber. Carlos Hernandez isn't a part of this postseason team, but a John Schreiber is, and that's a guy that showed up in spring training. It's an outstanding job, top to bottom, organizationally, from ownership to the front office to the coaching staff and, of course, to the players. Now, when I look at the players and the 26 men that will make up this roster for the ALDS, Royals can make some switches. They can make some changes. I don't know where you're looking for an upgrade, though, or where you see a possible upgrade elsewhere on the 40-man roster. Now, Carlos Hernandez wasn't on that playoff team in Baltimore. Alec Marsh wasn't. Robbie Grossman wasn't. Are you anxious to put either three of them, any three of them? Do you want to see Carlos Hernandez, maybe an Alec Marsh, out of the bullpen? Do you have Alec Marsh replace? I don't think so. I think you ride with the roster as currently constructed. I think those 15 position players and 11 pitchers you had in Baltimore will suffice in a five-game series because, as the Royals' assistant general manager, Scott Sharp, who was kind enough to join us earlier in the show, as he said, man, we have an off day after game one, an off day after game two. We'll see what happens after game three. Game four is the very next day, but then there's another off day after game four. So, you know, the way that I look at it, and I think it is the way that it will go down, game one, as we know, will be Michael Wacha opposite Gerrit Cole. We know game two on Monday, which is going to be over on our sister station, the Fan AM 610. Game two is going to be Cole Reagans going opposite Carlos Rodon. We know that. Now, we don't know game three, but I think it's safe to say it's Seth Lugo for the good guys. It's either Clark Schmidt or Marcus Stroman for the Pinstripers. Michael Wacha can come back for game four, and then you have Cole Reagans set up for a decisive game five, if necessary, in the Bronx. Game five would take place, not this Saturday, obviously, but next Saturday. So game one, coming up on Saturday, 5:38. Game two, Monday night, over on AM 610. Game three is on Wednesday. Game four on Thursday. Game five, if needed, is on Saturday. Plenty to be excited for heading into this series.
We could see the three American League MVP finalists all playing in one postseason series. Enjoy it, baseball world, because you don't see this very often. Aaron Judge, Bobby Witt Jr., Juan Soto. We might see Gunnar Henderson part of that top three when the finalists are announced sometime next month. But imagine how fortunate we are as baseball fans to be able to enjoy these three players all at once. And when you consider what Soto and Judge have done together as Yankee teammates, both hitting more than 40 home runs, this has been done by Ruth and Gehrig, Mantle and Maris, and these two gentlemen. This is the elite of one of the great franchises in the history of the sport, of all sports, to be honest. And then with Witt, he was quite literally the decisive player in a low-scoring series against the Orioles. So enjoy it, everybody.
Put your feet up and enjoy it. I'm with you. That's John Morosi earlier today on MLB Network. Coming up, Vinny Pasquantino has the chance to become a true Kansas City baseball legend. I'll explain why after this. All right, welcome back. I'm Josh Vernier. I'm the Royals Insider. That's what they call me around here. Royals Insider for 96.5 The Fan. Appreciate you listening. I'll be on the air Saturday, 4:30 for the On Deck Show. Getting you ready for game one of the ALDS. Royals Yankees rekindle a historic postseason rivalry, meeting up in 76, 77, 78, 1980, and Saturday. Michael Wacha goes opposite Gerrit Cole, first pitch at 17:38. Scott in Topeka says there's too many people listening, Vern, that don't understand what 17:38 means. You need to explain it. Scott, I don't think it would make sense even if I explained it. You know, think that one through. I'm not trying to knock you. I just mean it's so wild. It would take too long and it would, okay, boomer, I don't think the kids care. I don't think kids care about Fetty Wap. I don't think they care about Jerod Dyson. I understand, Scott. Kids don't understand. They can read online. I'm sure Flanny wrote about it back in the day. Go read Jeffrey Flanagan's article. From the 816, Vern, I'm going to be celebrating my 50th coming up on Saturday. Be with my son, listening on the Odyssey app as we build our cabin down in the Ozarks. It's supposed to be sweltering this weekend, right? In Kansas City, isn't it? So I was supposed to get summer weather back. Dan and KCK, appreciate you listening. I see Logan's out there listening. Logan understands how lucky he is to be alive in the time of Patrick Mahomes and Bobby Witt Jr., no doubt. From the 816, Fern, do you see John Sherman raising payroll next year? Listen, you're going to lose Michael Wacha. I think you can replace that internally. No, I don't think that he'll be cheap. But when I look at this team right now, I don't think they need to spend more than $100 million like they did last offseason. Now, I think this could be a more prototypical mid-market, small-market offseason. I don't think you need the big splashes anymore, right? You're still paying Seth Lugo a large chunk of money. Salvi's still getting north of $20 million next year. Now, Bobby's number is going to start going up. No, I don't see anything big coming. You have a first baseman, you know that. You have your shortstop. Mikel and Massey can fit in there somewhere. Izzy's in center. Hunter Renfro's going to be back next year in right field. Salvi and Freddie behind the dish. The rotation of Lugo, Reagan, Singer, Marsh, Bubich, or Lynch. And like I just mentioned, they've turned this bullpen over twice in the past 12 months. So no, I don't think they need to sign another $30 million, $32 million contract like they did with Lugo and Waka, respectively, this offseason. I appreciate you listening. I mentioned going to break. Vinny Pasquantino has the ability to become a true Kansas City baseball legend. And I say that because if this team is able to reach the heights that they are attempting to reach, the stories that are going to come out about that month of rehab that Vinny went through, the stories that are going to come out about the pain that he's playing through right now, I think we'll take him to that legend status. Again, remember what he was dealing with. Thumb surgery a month ago. And if you've seen the pictures of how gnarly that scar looked, a scar that was placed there a month ago, the sacrifice, both the work ethic sacrifice to get back, but also the personal sacrifice, dealing with that pain, possible further injury, but doing it for your teammates. The boys that you grinded through all summer with this year, last year, the year before that. Man, Vinny's something else.
Got the surgery. Once I had the surgery, I was in so much pain that I was like, this is definitely not going to happen. And then as the days went, it's like, okay, I'm getting better. When they took it off and I saw the scar, I was like, absolutely not. This is definitely not going to happen. It looked like there was a worm on my hand. It was disgusting. But then when we got the stitches out, I was like, oh my God, it looks like a hand again. Maybe we do have a shot. And then as we've been progressing, things have been going well, and well enough that the team, you know, we decided that it was time. So the emotions are pretty good today.
Listen to the way that his teammates talk about him. Here's Bobby Witt Jr. yesterday on MLB Network.
Yeah, it's huge. I know how hard he worked the last month. It's crazy how fast he came back. He was busting his tail each and every day just to get back. And so just having him in the lineup, just, and he's going to produce. He produced today, got the RBI in the first. And so it's unbelievable just to see him work, how hard he put the work in, and just how he is today.
Again, maybe we're spoiled by Salvador Perez and all the bruises and broken bones and strained ligaments and concussions and blurry eyes and everything that Salvi's dealt with and overcome and played through. Maybe we're spoiled. But again, guys, I mean, it doesn't take all that much brain power to understand if you undergo surgery and a month later, you're standing in the box while Corbin Burns throws 95-mile-per-hour cutters in on your hand, there's just no way he's not in an immense amount of pain. Here's his buddy, his teammate, Michael Massey.
Yeah, I think everybody in that clubhouse just appreciates what he's done. I mean, he had surgery less than a month ago, or about a month ago, and he's out there, you know, fighting through the pain and competing for us. So, you know, that kind of stuff doesn't go unnoticed to teammates. And you know, even beyond that, he's got such a good character, and he's been kind of the life of our clubhouse for a long time. You know, not just this year, but you know, as you mentioned, all the way up to the minor league. So just a great guy to be around. You know, really, really cool to be teammates with him, and better to be friends.
It was about a year ago. It was more than a year ago. It was last summer I started calling him the undeniable Vinny Pasquantino, because behind the microphone and post-game interviews, pre-game interviews, he is undeniable. He's entertaining. He would do this job that I'm doing right now a lot better than me. He's funnier than me. He's more engaging than he could do whatever he wants, what his baseball career has done. But then in the batter's box as well, he's undeniable. And you've seen that in the first two games since coming back. Again, he's gone for a month, steps in against the Baltimore pitching staff in must-win games and produces a pair of knocks, a pair of walks, and a run driven in. If you can persevere through that, come out the other side, who was that offensive lineman? Was that Allegretti? was playing through an injury when the Chiefs won the Super Bowl. He's going to be a hero here forever. Vinny's hitting third for your favorite baseball team. You're never going to forget that.
This is why you play, man. This is why you play. Couldn't be happier right now. It's just so much fun to see this going on. And, you know, compared to the other day, it's so much fun to have been a part of it. Yeah, it's just awesome. I love when my eyes are burning with champagne. I hate it, but I love it at the same time. So it's just incredible.
Those are the things that teammates remember for the rest of their lives. Whether the Royals finish this job or not, they'll never forget what Vinny's doing. For himself, but what Vinny's doing is for the team, for the organization, for the city. Royals-Yankees, Saturday. Whew. Vinny standing in against Gerrit Cole. Yes, please. Speaking of Gerrit Cole, we'll take a closer look at the New York Yankees and how the Royals match up. That's coming up next. Welcome back on 96.5 The Fan. A little Royals baseball talk on a Thursday night. I'm Josh Verniers. 96.5 The Fans. Royals insider. I'll get you ready for game one coming up on Saturday. 4:30 for the first... 4:30 for the on-deck show. 5:38 for the first pitch. Easier to remember if you just stick to the military time. 17:38 for the first pitch on Saturday. And then game two in New York on Monday night, going opposite Chiefs-Saints, Monday Night Football. You'll hear the Chiefs game, of course, right here on 96.5 The Fan. You'll hear Royals-Yankees, Reagans-Rodon. You'll hear that over on our sister station, The Fan AM 610. All right, so taking a look at this Yankees ball club, of course, they're led by, well, yes, Aaron Judge and Juan Soto, but me, I always start with pitching. The reigning American League Cy Young Award winner, Gerrit Cole, is who leads this Yankees ball club into the postseason. And the only way the Yankees are going to get off the schneid and win their first title in 15 years is if Gerrit Cole goes crazy. Like what Cole Reagans was about to do in game one. Go crazy. And Reagans had 8 punchouts through 6 innings. He was coming back out for the 7th. He was going to set the franchise postseason record. The record, by the way, held by Dennis Leonard back in 1978. He punched out 9 Yankees, I believe, in that ALCS. But Gerrit Cole's been to the postseason before, and track record-wise, you would have to say, he's the best pitcher in this series. Now, that's just what the numbers say, right? It's going to be his 18th postseason start coming up on Saturday. But if I'm being real, for as good as Cole Reagans is, for as great as he may be on Saturday, Cole Reagans is the number one in this series. Seth Lugo's, I would say, is probably the third best starter behind Reagans and Cole. Carlos Rodon, I'm given the advantage when it comes to starting pitching, and I think you have to give the advantage to the Royals. Because Rodon, man, I just don't know what to expect. I feel as if what we've seen from Michael Wacha for the past 3.5 months is consistency. I haven't seen that. Now, the stuff's big. The stuff's been big since he was drafted by the White Sox. Carlos Rodon's had the goods for years now. Marcus Stroman's a guy that pitched his tail off against the Royals in the postseason back in 2015. If I'm Aaron Boone, that's who I'm giving the ball to at Kauffman Stadium for Game 3 on Wednesday. Yeah, I think that's going to be Seth Lugo going opposite Marcus Stroman, which means some pretty quality arms will then make their way to the Yankees bullpen. Just like, Michael Lorenzen and Brady Singer are now in the Royals bullpen. When you're looking at the tail of the tape, advantage Royals when it comes to starting pitching, I think the bullpen is a push. I know how good the Royals bullpen has been really dating back to the beginning of September, but especially over the past 3 weeks. But that New York bullpen has talent, has swing and miss stuff, has some big velocity. Clay Holmes and Luke Weaver, you know, Mark Leiter can get that double play coming out of the bullpen. They're going to have Luis Gil likely out there. Clark Schmidt likely goes to that bullpen. So I'll say relief pitching is a push. Offensively, I'll lean New York. I'll give the Yankees the edge when they have a pair of future Hall of Famers in Aaron Judge and Juan Soto, when I know the Royals can say the same thing about Bobby and Salvador Perez. What do you have around your two superstars? As far as consistent bats around your two superstars, well, the Royals have Vinny Pasquantino, who, in my opinion, is better than any of the complementary pieces around Judge or Soto. Now, that's saying something. At least I feel like it's saying something, because Jazz Chisholm is an all-star. Alex Verdugo is a World Series champion. Anthony Volpe and Gleyber Torres were each top prospects. We'll see if Jason Dominguez makes the team. The Martian might not even be on the team. Trent Grissom has some postseason experience and some really big home runs in October. But honestly, Giancarlo Stanton, Alex Verdugo, Jazz Chisholm, Gleyber, I'll take Vinny over all of them. The problem is if we're doing a draft of the non-Hall of Famers in the lineups, right, anyone other than Soto, Judge, Salvi, and Bobby, Vinny's the first pick. But then I think like the next four picks are all New York Yankees. So offensively, I lean pinstripes. Now this is where it gets good for you Royals fans. Where it gets good for us in Kansas City. Defensively, you and I, we've been talking about it dating back to April, dating back to opening day. Starting pitching, defense, and team speed. The great equalizer. The leveler of all playing fields. To me, it's the baseball equivalency of a franchise quarterback, where so long as Mahomes shows up on Monday night, Chiefs got a pretty good chance of winning. Well, so long as the Royals' elite pitching, defense, and team speed shows up on Saturday and Monday night, Royals got a pretty good chance of winning. And when you look at these two defensive teams, the Royals are elite, and the Yankees are very good. So that's close to a push, but I'm obviously going to give the edge to the Royals. And if you want to know why, Kyle Isbell's the real reason why. Izzy's ability in center field is what pushes me over the edge and say Royals advantage defensively, because the Yanks have some good defensive catchers. Now, Volpe isn't shabby there at shortstop. Chisholm has his moments at the hot corner. But the defensive advantage in the outfield with Melendez, Izzy, and Hunter Renfro, to me, is so stark compared to Judge Verdugo, who has a good arm, but Judge Verdugo in left and Juan Soto in right. And, you know, you have to imagine they're going to put Giancarlo Stanton in the lineup as their designated hitter. And then base running, it's really not even a conversation. Royals are and have been one of the five best base running teams in Major League Baseball. Maikel Garcia has been one of the five best base runners in Major League Baseball. And then, of course, Bobby Witt Jr. is the fastest player in baseball. And Bobby, of course, used that speed to win the game yesterday, a breakneck speed. Elite speed, by the way, is 30 feet per second. Bobby's RBI game-winning knock in yesterday's sixth inning, he got down the line, 31.3 feet per second. So while the Royals are elite on the base paths, the Yankees this season were the worst in baseball. When you have monsters like Judge and Stanton, whose arms don't really allow you to run gracefully, yeah, I can understand how you end up in the bottom. I mean, 30th out of 30 teams when it comes to base running. So, tale of the tape. Royals have the advantage when it comes to starting pitching, have the advantage defensively, have the advantage when it comes to team speed. The bullpen is not one-sided. It's a push at worst. And then, sure, I'll give the Yankees the edge offensively. Yankees also have all the pressure in the world on their shoulders while the Royals are playing with house money. Hey, I'll talk to you coming up on Saturday at 4:30 with the On Deck Show. JT Noah, thank you very much for the help back at the studio. Kansas City, how much fun is this? Another Blue October, and it rolls on. The show's coming to Kauffman Stadium next Wednesday. Get your tickets now. It's going to be wild. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday night, Kansas City. Take care. Thanks for listening.